Hi, everybody. So it's been a couple weeks. I got a dog licking me under the table. This is great. So today we are chatting with Craig Marshall from the World Pro Ski Tour. Or we chatted with, I guess I'm recording this intro after we did it, which is cheating, I guess. But basically, we just did a run through of what the World Pro Ski Tour is, what they do, ski racing in general, you know, where ski racing's at as a whole. And we kind of just ran through the whole deal. And it was great. We don't talk about ski racing enough, I don't think, on this show. I'm sure we will more. What are you handing me, pup? Oh, we got a toy now. This is sick. Sorry, I'm getting distracted. I also like, I'm sorry if I cough during this episode or I sound horrible. I have the black plague I've had the black plague for the last 2 weeks, which sucks. We got the Big E flu. If you don't know what the Big E is, it's the worst. So for sure, don't go there. I'm just kidding. It's the Big E's fun if you're not working it. It's just like a big fair where all you do is drink and eat and be a degenerate for 2.5 weeks. You don't have to go 2.5 weeks, but I had to be there for 2.5 weeks selling skis, and boards and clothing and all the things. So, that was cool. Other than that, not much has been up, the last couple weeks here. So, be sure to follow the World Pro Ski Tour at World Pro Ski Tour, on social media, for sure. Follow us on social media. If you don't, I'm sure you do. Be sure to leave us a review on iTunes if you can, or whatever medium you're listening to us on. It always helps. We love to see your guys' feedback. We love to see the show growing. It's been great lately. Definitely check us out in the new Free Skier Buyer's Guide too, huh? We've got a new ad that just went in there. And so far the reception's been great. So we're psyched on that. Stay tuned for more episodes coming soon. We'll be doing them more consistently as we go through and get closer and closer to ski season. We'll start dropping them like, I don't know, like something that you drop. Anyway, enjoy the episode. We'll talk to you guys soon. Let's jump into this thing. We are here with Craig Marshall from the World Pro Ski Tour. What's going on, Craig?
Not much, man. Just struggling through the days of fall where it's like 50 degrees and raining and there's no snow, but it's not nice out. It's just a little purgatory for you.
Yeah, it's been a little miserable the last couple of weeks. I mean, it's nice that it's getting cooler for sure. I like that we're on schedule for once. It always seems like we have like 90 degree days in September and we didn't really have any of those. So I feel pretty good about that coming into winter, but you know, it is what it is, I guess.
Yeah, I just saw on your Instagram this morning, sorry, not your Instagram, but the Ski Town All-Stars Instagram, some snow out west. Looked like it was in Canada, maybe Western Canada. And they definitely got a good amount. And I was like, oh man, it is like right around the corner.
Dude, there's snow happening and it's like, it's coming soon. I can't believe like it's already October and we've got like, I'm calling it 45 days until the season starts for us here. But like, I mean, it's realistically probably, I mean, Killington will open in what, 25, 30? It'll be something like that. And everybody will be skiing that one run for the first couple weeks and be all overexcited. And then the season will actually kick off. So.
Yeah, I'm not about that life. That's not something that I live for. Just that's probably some of the worst conditions imaginable when you get that one strip and there's about 50,000 people and you get the scraped off and then the moguls and it's all man-made.
I know. It's a nice idea, but you kind of just get murked going down the hill like by somebody that's like really not ready for the first day and like they're on this narrow run. Like you said, there's too many people and it's just like, I mean, it is what it is. Like I said, it's not like it's nice that they want to open and have the longest season on the East Coast, but there's got to be like a limit to it, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's never never worth it for sure. You get done with the day and you're like, you know, I probably could have waited it out a little longer.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so let's get into this thing here. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into this whole thing, ski racing, and why you're involved now with the World Pro Ski Tour.
So I grew up at Sugarloaf, and my family has always been involved in the ski industry, going back to my grandfather on my dad's side. Was involved in founding Reflex Poles, and my great uncle on the same side, Peter Weber, had ski shops here in Maine for the longest time, and they were both really involved in the industry back in the 60s and 70s. And then I grew up ski racing at Sugarloaf, obviously, went to CVA, the ski academy there, and then and raced at Colby for 4 years on the D1 team there. So when I got out of school, I was not thinking, hell yeah, I need to get into the ski industry by any means. I was very much trying to do something different, and ended up here in Portland, Maine, doing sports marketing for a small agency called Shamrock Sports and Entertainment. And that was a really cool experience. I worked on a lot of different unique types of platforms, everything from Tough Mudder to Circuit of the Americas, which is a Formula One track down in Austin, and really got a good introduction into sponsorships and selling. And we didn't do much promotion on their behalf, but we were mostly packaging sponsorships and trying to get in touch with companies and develop some new partners for those properties. And then I had in the back of my mind for a good amount of that year that there was an opportunity to potentially get a professional ski tour back going. I had talked to John Jacobs, who owns Reliable Racing in New York, about some people that were getting some momentum going, him being one of those people. And so I reached out to one of the other guys involved in it, Ed Rogers, who ran professional tours from 1976 to 98. And he kind of became the head of that group, John being one of them, and four or five others. And we all formed a company, and I became the the first employee, and then everybody who was part of the founding really pitched in. But that was early 2016, and the rest is history.
So what's the end goal with it? Like, what's your guys' plan? How and what level are the skiers, I guess, in the World Pro Ski Tour, right? Like, so I don't know enough about it personally to tell you, like, okay, like, these are the kind of guys that are in it. And I think I'm probably in the majority there, where, like, I'd heard of it before, but, like, just in passing. So who's really in it? What do you do to qualify? How can you participate? You know, what are the kind of standards that you guys are doing?
Yeah, so to go back into the original tours, those guys were some of the best in the world, and they, you know, would compete on the pro tour and either go to the World Cup and do well, or some of the World Cup guys would come down to the pro tour and not always win. Like, the Mayer brothers in the 90s came down to the pro tour after their World Cup careers, and the most winning pro skier ever, Bernard Knaus, he beat them, you know? So it was a sort of thing where the pro tour was, you know, a unique environment, obviously, with the dual format and jumps in the courses and everything. But it definitely was something that the top guys could compete on the World Cup. Fast forward to today, we've done four events so far over 2 years, and we've been able to get basically the best American and Canadian athletes in tech, besides Ted Ligety. He hasn't raced with us yet, but the best slalom skiers, certainly, and some of the best GS skiers as well. And then we've attracted some international athletes as well. The Slovakian brothers, the Zampas, who were in the Olympics this year, and Adam, the older brother, actually finished sixth in one of the races at the 2014 Olympics. He came over and competed with us, and we've also had athletes from France, Sweden, Finland, Argentina, and a few other countries. So it's been a lot of top World Cup guys. We've had NCAA champions, and, you know, other Olympic level athletes, which has been really awesome. And, you know, to compete, the great thing about it is when you're dealing with the FIS, which controls the World Cup, there's a lot of bureaucracy, and obviously the national governing bodies control a lot of it. But with us, it's very straightforward. You pay your entry fee, register online. Anybody over the age of 18 can enter, and that includes guys and gals. We've had both you know, women and men compete in the last few years in one race, which has been really cool. And you get thrown into qualification, and the qualifying is a really, you know, fair and equal opportunity to get into the finals. And then we take our top 32, and everybody who qualifies will make money. So it's been really cool to see those Olympic guys do really well, obviously, and have an opportunity to make money outside of the World Cup. But it's also been cool to see maybe, you know, a guy who raced in college and now is working, you know, a desk job in Boston or something, and head up to Waterville Valley or Sunday River and compete with those guys and still kind of mix it up. So it's definitely a variety of racers, and, you know, it's been a cool environment of competition in that sense.
That's awesome. So how, I guess, what's the end goal with this, right? So like, what's the next step? So you guys had four events last year, you said, right?
We've had four over the last 2 years. So this past season we had three. Yeah.
Okay. And how many are you guys planning on doing going forward? Is that something that you guys want to keep growing, or do you want to keep sticking to like three, four events a season so that the payouts are bigger and the attractions bigger, like they're more event styles than a series? Like what's the plan there?
So eventually we want to get to where the Pro Tour was back in the day, which was 30 plus events throughout the year. You know, men's events separate from women's events. So, you know, each gender is going to have 15 plus, and that essentially means every weekend throughout the winter and a few off-season events as well in Europe or the Southern Hemisphere, wherever it may be. You know, when you create a platform like that in sports marketing world, you really create a much more valuable sponsorship proposition. So for us to be able to grow the tour and create more television programming and create more stops along the way in different areas of the country, that will provide more per event revenue as well, which means increased prize money. So that's the long-term strategy. In the short term, we're hoping to get to a four or five event schedule this year. Right now, we're just evaluating our options with different resorts across the country and different sponsorships to figure out what the best schedule is going to be. But I can say we're definitely going to be in New England, in Colorado, and hopefully get to some areas of the country that also, you know, really love ski racing and deserve to see a big event like this. So
that's awesome.
Really, in the end, we want to have an athlete who isn't going to qualify for the World Cup, isn't going to qualify for the national team, but still has a lot of ability and a lot of talent and will to compete, have that alternative platform to go and ski race and still, you know, have an opportunity to make money. So, you know, certainly we want to have the best athletes in the world, but if somebody, say, races at, you know, a Division I school or even a USCSA Division III school in college and feels like they still have a lot of gas in the tank, we want to provide an option where they can make, you know, 10, 20 grand throughout, you know, say 15 events that winter, and, you know, still be able to really pursue ski racing.
That's awesome. So, yeah, I think that's one of the things that skiing is missing from a lot of other sports, right? Is like just the competitive nature at different levels. Like it seems like there's either like you're a full on pro or you're not, you know, like there, or you're just like a ski bum. Like it doesn't seem like there's enough, I guess, for people that kind of like that have the ability to perform well, but aren't at that high, high level yet, I guess. So I think that's another cool thing about what you guys are doing is like you have that, there is that avenue, I guess, for those people now.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm sure from the free skiing world and the, you know, the backcountry world as well, you see that all the time where you're like, wow, that guy really rips. And, you know, he has a ton of ability and wants to get out there, but maybe doesn't have the name and isn't, you know, in movies or, you know, competing in the X Games or anything like that. Whereas obviously the guys who are sort of at the top, you know their names and they're going to have the opportunity to, you know, ski for sponsors and ski in events for prize money. It's the same on the racing side. You know, there are a lot of guys who ski at a really high level. But you know, maybe they didn't make the US ski team and they've been working in a ski shop and racing in their locals league. And we saw that this year. I mean, we saw guys at our Aspen event who were absolutely shredding. And, you know, they were like 29, 30 years old and they just ski all the time, work, you know, some ski bum job. But what we really want to see going forward is the both of those stories, you know, the guy who works in a shop in Aspen and he can, you know, qualify for the event and go toe to toe against Nolan Casper or Michael Ankeny or AJ Guinness, these guys who are World Cup Olympic level racers.
Right. Yeah. I think that's one of the best parts, I think, is like you can really, like you have another opportunity kind of at that. And there's not a lot of other ways to do it. I guess now with social media, it's a little different, like in the free ski side of things, because like you can kind of be like a social media pro skier, like in a way. Like, so I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, I guess, how has social media, I guess, affected the race world? Like, is it as prevalent as it is in the free skiing world, where like it seems like everybody has to have a huge social media following to be like to be prevalent at this point?
Yeah. You know, it's not as important, I would imagine, because I think the free ski world has always been so film focused, right? That
right.
Sort of a big part of the whole business is ski movies. So naturally, when you introduce social media, it's almost going to be a mini, you know, version of that, where you're creating these small amounts of content and promoting your sponsors, and then 14-year-old kids are buying the skis because they saw your edit on Instagram, whatever it may be. On the ski racing side, I wouldn't say it's as important, and such a big part of the ski racing business is the ski manufacturers. So for them, they're pouring a lot of money into research and development for their race product, and then obviously investing in athletes and sponsoring them, so that Lindsey Vonn, when she wins, she's got those skis on the podium. And so much of their business, you know, from say like Head, is in Europe, and so much of the viewership is in Europe of the World Cup. So that's really the big important thing. And I think the difference between the free ski world and the alpine world is that the pinnacle of the racing side is the World Cup, where there's live TV all over the world and you're getting millions and millions of people watching. Whereas for you guys, it's more the ski movies and the social media and that sort of thing. But there are definitely guys who have put more time into it and been a little bit more creative. And the biggest one I would say is Robbie Kelly. And he's a Vermont guy who's been on the World Cup now for the last 5 or 6 years. And it's not like he's ever been, you know, the best guy we have in the country. He's been really close, but, you know, he's never been Ted Ligety or Bodie Miller. But he's had some really cool success by doing crazy stuff like hiking up Killington in May and setting a slalom course on like the little bit of snow that's left at the very top of the mountain. He hiked up with slalom gates and all his gear and spent the night in a tent and all this stuff. And he put this edit together and it was so sick. And he went up with his buddy Tucker Marshall, who's also one of our pro racers, and they had a drone going and all this stuff. And I think the, you know, the video on Facebook got just absolutely sent around like crazy. And, you know, he developed a kind of a cult following through that. So certainly if you are able to be creative and get some interesting stuff out there, you create a better value proposition for your sponsors, even if your, you know, performance isn't, you know, as good as some of the other guys getting the same support.
Right. Yeah. That'll be interesting to see for sure. I think that's kind of what ski racing is missing almost, is like, you just don't hear it talked about enough, right? Like, I know tons of people that race, and like, I mean, it's just like, it's a big thing on the mountain, right? Like, and it's definitely a big part of every mountain culture, but like, it's just not talked enough, I guess, talked about enough in the way that you would think it would be. So like, is that something that you're seeing? Is it growing? Is it shrinking? You know, because skiing in general, I think, is growing, but I don't know that the racing side of things, at least in the US, is growing. But I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
A big part of it, I think, is the superstars from the US. And right now, over the last 20 years, really, we've been pretty blessed to have Bodie Miller, Darren Rolfs, Ted Ligety, Lindsey Vonn, Michaela Schifrin, and to have some of the crossover stars as well has been really important. Obviously, Bodie became pretty famous for some good reasons and some not so good reasons. You know, Lindsey Vonn certainly has become a big celebrity in LA, and she's, you know, hanging out with other pro athletes and movie stars and all that. So that definitely affects things pretty significantly, I would say. I think from a mass participation perspective, the ski racing world is definitely pretty healthy at the junior levels. Programs are big and they're pretty healthy right now, which is a huge part of the whole industry, right? Because those are the kids who are supporting the manufacturers, and then they're supporting the top level athletes, and it's all kind of a cycle. But really at the tour, what we're trying to do is to make ski racing more accessible and more exciting for people who aren't necessarily involved with it all the time or didn't grow up with it. And one of the biggest reasons that we use the dual format, putting two guys in courses side by side with jumps instead of doing, you know, one single course like a time trial sort of format, is to make it more relatable for people who don't know a lot about ski racing, and they see it and they're like, oh man, that is so cool. First of all, it looks like a drag race and it's fast. The runs are short, 20 seconds. You can see who's winning and who's losing. You can kind of understand why one guy is maybe faster than the other by comparing their technique side by side. But also, we use a bracket for the finals day. So, of course, Americans love brackets. We love, you know, the playoffs in all of our sports. And so that kind of visual side of it as well is appealing. And, you know, from an on-site experience, we're definitely breaking down the wall between the spectators and the athletes. And, you know, there's no fencing to keep the athletes in a certain area. They mingle with the fans and they take pictures. And then after the races, we have Tito's sponsored parties where the athletes are, you know, rubbing elbows with all the fans and meeting people there. So we really like to make ski racing sexy again and make it fun and not so stuck up. I mean, a lot of our athletes talk about how they think they ski better at our tour because they're more relaxed and it's more fun. And certainly the competition level is really high, and the difference between first and second is the difference between 10 grand and 5 grand. But, you know, when the race is over, the guy who won 10 grand is probably buying drinks for the rest of the guys. So it's that sort of atmosphere that we really think can eventually make ski racing really popular for people who didn't grow up with it. And especially when we can go to areas all across the country and touch base with all these different communities, that'll be a huge part of growing the sport in the U.S.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it for sure. And that's like, I like what you said about making ski racing kind of sexy again, because there was a point when, like, even in like 2005-ish, like, it wasn't super popular, but you had athletes like Bodie Miller that were kind of like, they were an athlete that people wanted to relate to, kind of, you know, and they kind of transcend the sport in that way. And Lindsey Vonn's kind of like that in a way, and Michaela Schifrin's kind of like that, but they don't, I guess Bodie, when Bodie was racing, it was a little different because more people wanted to be like Bodie and ski like Bodie, not just on the race course, right? So, like, that was always a big push, and I think Head and a lot of different companies did a good job of marketing that. And now it's like, I don't know. I guess I only hear about racing when it comes to Michaela Schifrin and Lindsey Vonn. And other than that, and maybe Ted Ligety, but like, other than that, it's like pretty quiet. But that being said, the growth for kids getting into racing seems like it's growing at a shop level, I guess. So I don't know. I guess I'm kind of conflicted in terms of like what I think, like where I think it's going and where, you know, where it is right now and all this stuff. Like, but I think that is part of it, right? Like, you have to make ski racing more appealing to the people who wouldn't otherwise care, you know, to the people that don't ski race, right? Like, I don't play tennis, but I'll watch tennis when there's stuff going on, right? Like, when it's an event. And I guess it's that kind of thing, right? Where you want to pull in other people, especially in the ski side of things, because they're skiers. It should be more relatable. And I think that dual format will actually, I think that will help actually quite a bit.
Yeah. And one of the biggest factors, again, as you mentioned, if you're sitting around on a Sunday afternoon and you turn on your TV, there's going to be golf on or there's going to be tennis on. And if there's names that you recognize and you have some interest in the human interest aspect of it, I mean, you and I are probably the same way. We don't care about who's got the better backhand or who's strategically playing better. It's about Rafa versus Roger, right? And right. The dramatic side of that. Or in golf, it's about Tiger and his legacy and Jordan Spieth or whoever the other names are. And I think the biggest part right now that ski racing is up against is the TV part. And it's such a European-driven sport, and so many of the races are in Europe, which creates TV slots that are at 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the morning. And they're even earlier in Colorado, which is a real shame because that's even better of a market than New England, you know, for ski racing. You know, it's, you know, up for debate, but right. You could argue that. And so it's not going to be a really accessible thing for the layman to access on TV. And that's how so many people get information and get introduced to a sport. And if it's on at, you know, the middle of the night, then you're not going to get those people. So another part of what we want to do is create a TV schedule and a TV product, more specifically, that's appealing to folks who don't know anything about the sport. So it's not going to be on at 3 in the morning, and it's not going to be something where you're like, oh, you know, I don't understand why is, you know, one guy is skiing faster than the other. But it's something where if somebody from you know, Nebraska or whatever flips onto CBS Sports Network and sees our event, they think, wow, that's cool. That's so awesome. They're going down side by side and they're going off these jumps and it looks like they're going really fast and the finishes are really close and we got a photo finish and that sort of thing, I think, can create a crossover appeal. Because if you look at how much more popular and financially successful tennis and golf are in this country, it doesn't make any sense from a sort of participation level, right? The difference in funding for, you know, TV and prize money and sponsorships and all that is so dramatically different, but the difference in participation level is not that significant.
Right.
It's mostly TV product, because if you have the Masters, you're going to get 8 hours of coverage on a Sunday afternoon on CBS.
Right.
And I mean, how valuable is that? Right. But our biggest events in ski racing, besides the Olympics, you know, are going to be on at maybe, you know, 5 a.m.
Yeah.
So
you don't see shit.
That's, I mean, yeah, that's really the biggest issue right now. And something that we're looking to address.
Yeah, I guess. And that'll help too. Like, you guys being based here is important, I guess, because then your clientele kind of can at least, so I guess that's a good question before I say that. Can people watch this stuff? Like, is there a stream available for people to watch this kind of stuff when it's going on?
So over the last 2 years, we have not done any live streaming, and that will not likely be in the plans for this winter, but okay. We do air on CBS Sports Network on a tape delay. And all of that information for the programming and the scheduling and everything is on our social media, at World Pro Ski Tour on Instagram and World Pro Ski Tour on Facebook, and also on our website, worldproskitour.com. And so if you stay tuned to that throughout the winter, then you can get those air times. We certainly post little highlights throughout the season and during the events on our Instagram and on our stories and all that, so you can stay updated with what's going on. But if you want to catch the whole broadcast, which I certainly would recommend, it's really exciting and it's a great show, then CBS Sports Network is where we're broadcast, and you can get all that information on our social media throughout the winter.
Sweet. That sounds awesome. So we should also talk about, you guys just launched, or you just launched a podcast for the World Pro Ski Tour. So let's talk about that. What's it like? How'd the first episode go? What are we doing with it? What's the plan?
Yeah. So the goal was to just create content that people are interested in the off season, right? Because this is the time of year when people are just fiending for anything ski related, right? They're so stoked to see the new ski movie from last year or some off-season training from ski racers or whatever it may be. That's the sort of stuff that people are just so stoked for. So we don't have any events right now. We can't create any new content in that sense, but we can certainly talk to our athletes about their stories and their background and what their plans are for the future and whatnot. And certainly right now it's a really interesting time, because coming out of the Olympic year, the U.S. ski team basically didn't bring back any of their male slalom athletes that were World Cup level from last year. So that's been a huge story in the ski racing world this year. And that's affected a lot of our athletes, because that's, you know, to the same group of guys essentially. So we talk a lot about that. I interviewed Michael Ankeny for our first episode, and that released last Thursday on September 28th or something like that. I can't remember exactly what the date was, but yeah, that released and it was great. We got a really good reaction. We partnered with Ski Racing Media to help distribute it and spread the word. So they've been posting some content as well. And one of the big things that I wanted to do is to be able to interview the guys and be able to cut the interviews into segments and overlay the audio on top of some of our race footage and be able to repost that. So that's a way to, you know, create some more, you know, eyeballs on our race coverage and some more ways to see that as well. So we talk about a huge variety of things on the pod. Disclaimer, all the interviews are recorded, a ways before they'll be released. So I've actually already produced 6 interviews.
That's awesome.
Including the Ankeny one. So yeah, they'll be distributed, you know, periodically throughout the fall. But it also allows me to kind of preview some of the interviews. So Mark Engel, it was an Olympian last year, one of our best athletes that we've had. He's competed with us twice. And in his podcast interview, he talks about his views on religion and how religion and his development of seeing God and seeing Christianity has intermingled with his ski racing career. And we talked to Bernard Knaus, who was the only pro skier to make $1 million in his career. And we talked to him about what it was like to be a pretty famous person in the U.S. As an Austrian who, you know, just moved over to the U.S. on a whim because he got injured and couldn't make the Austrian ski team and had to find somewhere to compete. So we have some interviews with some other top pros, but those are just a couple of the highlights of the interesting things that we talk about. And I'll just give a little bit of a glimpse into the Knaus interview, because that was a fun one. We talk about his challenges with the groupie slalom, and I'll just leave it at that.
Challenges with the groupie slalom. Okay. So what is, I guess it's smart to do the pre-recorded thing. I don't think their life stories are going to change that much between now and when you release them. So I think it's good that you're doing that. It, like, trust me, it makes your life 100 times easier. I'm sure with as many other things as you have going on other than the podcast, it's like having some to kind of release out there is definitely a nice thing. I'm sure people won't mind that it's pre-recorded. How long are the conversations in general?
So the conversations are usually between 15 and 20 minutes.
Okay.
And the total episodes are under 20 minutes.
Okay.
And every episode we release a 1 minute teaser video on our social media. So that'll give you a reason to check out, to go on iTunes and go on our website and get the episodes. But we also are going to distribute content through Ski Racing Media, and our athletes will be posting that as well. And we post little summaries on our website. So there's lots of ways to get the content, and certainly following our social is the best way to be alerted and never miss an episode.
That's awesome. I got a couple questions, I think, for you here. So let me jump into this real quick. So this one actually, this is from Amanda, and Amanda wants to know how the involvement of women in the World Pro Ski Tour is growing, and how we can get to a point where there's equal payout for men and for women within the World Pro Ski Tour, because people want, I mean, obviously that's a big push right now, and it should be a big push right now for everybody kind of getting what they deserve, but at the same time, I don't know what the levels of participation are in terms of how many male racers you're getting versus how many female racers. So can you speak a little bit to that?
Yeah, certainly. So it's something that we talk about a lot, and certainly with the conversation in the outdoor sports world and the sports world in general, it's something that we need to work towards, because it is important, and we need to get to a point where we are paying, our female athletes are making as much as our male athletes. So with our first few events, our biggest concern was attracting enough athletes. And it's one of those chicken to the egg things, right? There aren't as many women competing on the level that we have our male athletes. So there are a lot of guys that are competing sort of at the, you know, independently of the US ski team. And on the women's side, there aren't as many. So for us, we didn't know how much participation we could get on the women's side. And obviously, we were concerned about that. So what we did for our first three races was, which was one in 2017 and the first two in 2018, we did just one race open to men and women. So we had all guys in our first one, and then we had one girl in each the second and third, and they just competed alongside the men. So it was a non-gendered race. It was open to all humans over the age of 18, which was really cool. And then what happened was our racer board, our athletes that kind of have a committee and talk to us about their concerns, they said, we want to have a women's bracket in the next event. So we said, all right, we're going to talk about this. And this was literally, we talked about this like 3 weeks before our final event last year. So we put our heads together and we were able to get some support from one of our sponsors, and we were able to trim a little bit of money off of the prize money that we had budgeted already. And we put some money together for a women's prize purse, and we were able to get nine athletes on the women's side to compete in a 8-person final. Unfortunately, we had two injuries in the qualification, so we had 7 in the finals. But yeah, it was great to see the women competing, and we had some really top level athletes from Dartmouth and other girls who had competed on the Division I circuit. And going forward into this season, we're unsure whether we're going to, you know, host a separate bracket, or if we're going to, you know, go back to the non-gendered model. But really, certainly our goal is to get to the point where we can have very equal and very similar competitions on the men's and women's side. And it's one of those things where right now there aren't as many women competing independently, but again, it's the chicken or the egg question, right? Because there aren't as many women competing because there are more opportunities for the guys. So we need to be progressive in getting the women's prize pool increase. That's a matter of developing more sponsorships, and it's you know, it's a big priority for us.
That's awesome, and that's great to hear. I'm sure she'll be psyched, and I mean, it definitely is an answer that satisfies me, I guess. So the other question that I had was from Jake, and Jake wants to know, if I have to register or if I want to participate, how can I participate? Where do I go? What are the steps if I want to be involved?
Yeah, so we have our registration all on our website, and it's not active yet because we haven't released our schedule yet. But if you follow us on social media, once the season gets announced and we start to open registration, we do a lot of posting because we want to get as many people aware of the fact that the registration is open. So anybody over the age of 18 can compete, and all it takes is paying your entry fee and showing up. There's no qualification before you get to the event. WorldProSkiTour.com, and obviously World Pro Ski Tour on social media. Just make sure you follow those. We'll be posting the links to registration, and we want to have as many people compete as possible because we know that there are a lot of people out there who have talent, and we just need to get them out to the events and let them cut their teeth.
Awesome. That sounds great. So let's wrap this thing up here. So one more time, where can people find you guys on social media, your website, and basically any last parting words for the people listening?
Yeah. So it's worldproskitour.com. I would say we definitely focus on Instagram as our biggest social media, and that's at World Pro Ski Tour. We also post a lot on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/worldproskitour. And again, follow us. We will be announcing our schedule soon. And it's a very exciting time for us going into this third season for the company. And we're going to be at an area near you, most likely. If you're listening to this podcast, then we'll be somewhere in your region. And definitely come out. I mean, it's a really exciting event to be a part of. Like I said, our sponsor Tito's Handmade Vodka throws 5 parties throughout the 3-day event, Thursday through Saturday. So those are a really good time, and some of the best ski bars in the country are on that party series. And yeah, we're thrilled to bring the podcast out this fall to get a little bit more exposure and a little bit of a different way to know our athletes. So check that out. Subscribe to that World Pro Ski Tour official podcast on iTunes. And if you have any, you know, interest in working with us, in sponsoring the tour, or any other sort of business related opportunity, we have a contact form on our website, and I will respond to you as soon as I can. So thanks for having me on, and it was really a pleasure to talk about the tour, and hopefully we can see you and all your listeners at one of the races this winter.
Yeah, man, we'd be psyched for sure. Thanks for coming on again, and we'll talk soon. We'll have to do this again sometime.
Perfect, awesome. All right, thanks, brother, for having me.
Yeah, thanks. Bye. So that was our episode with Craig Marshall. We had a great time chatting with Craig. It's super interesting to hear about different race organizations. Like, I am super ignorant to the whole race thing, so it's nice to hear somebody who actually knows something about it talk about it, instead of just listening to myself babble or, you know, just hearing other things. So definitely follow World Pro Ski Tour. Check out their new podcast. It was great. I listened to the whole thing. They're nice. They're short and sweet, unlike these ones where you have to listen to me talk for way too long. It's like 20-minute episodes, and they're great. You get some good info out of it. You get to hear some cool stories. It's great. They're dropping a new episode. I don't know when we're dropping this thing, so this maybe it'll be out tomorrow. Maybe it'll already be out. In all likelihood, episode 2 from the World Pro Ski Tour will already be out. Me and Romeo here playing whatever you play with dogs. I don't know what's the name of this game. I'm like a fucking alien sometimes. Anyway, and tug. That's what it is. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Be sure to like, rate, and review the show on iTunes or whatever you listen to us on. And stay tuned. Thanks, guys.